And we're now in the first book of the Torah called Bereshit, in Parasha Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha is the third reading portion of the annual Torah reading cycle, and this week's reading begins in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, and continues through Genesis chapter 17, verse 27. What does Lech Lecha mean? In English, Lech Lecha means go for yourself. Go for yourself. And now, 20 generations have gone by since Adam and Eve were created. So let's read the first three verses of Genesis chapter 12, beginning to read in verse 1. It says, "And the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your land and go from your birthplace and from your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will aggrandize your name, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you." Now the saga of the Torah creation story, you know, about Adam and Eve in Genesis, has now gone through 20 generations. Last week, we spoke about the story of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, and God tells Noah he is going to destroy mankind off the face of the earth with a flood. So why would God want to destroy mankind? We can read about that in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. It says, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping things, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them." So God gives Noah the divine dimensions on how to build the ark, how to build this wooden ark, which is no less than an ark of protection. We can create ourselves that's like a safety shield. Now we're talking about a spiritual safety shield of protection, and it's only available to a righteous person who's in unity with the laws of the Creator God. Now, this light we're talking about cannot be physically seen by the eyes. That's why it's called the hidden light of God. The hidden light of God. And that light is always projecting itself outwards from a righteous person. So how does this unseen, hidden light inside a righteous person work? How does this work? When someone, let's say, wants to do harm to the righteous one, this hidden light projects an idea inside the mind of the evildoer that says, leave this one alone. And where did this light come from? This is the light which God created on the first day of creation. And God said, let there be light. And in the book of John, in the New Testament, there's an account of how this hidden light works. And you can find that in the book of John chapter 18, verses 3 through 6. I'm beginning to read in verse 3. It says, Judas, then having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Now they were coming to arrest Yeshua. This was the night of the Passover, or right before the Passover. Now Jesus, therefore knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said to them, he said to this mob, whom do you seek? And they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said unto him, I am he. I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. And as soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Can you imagine how powerful that light coming out from Yeshua when he said to those that wanted to do him harm, I am he. What happened? They went backward and they fell to the ground. Now there's an interesting story in Genesis about Joseph, our patriarch Joseph. And the sarcophagus of Joseph was also a type of the ark. And the legend says that when Joseph's coffin was within inches of the Red Sea, the sea split in half to allow the children of Israel to cross over. And there's also the story of the ark Moses' mother made for her baby, and the story of the Israelites when they traveled in the wilderness for 40 years with the Ark of the Covenant. So when we count from Noah, another 10 generations go by. Here we are now with the birth of Abraham. And this is going to be talking also about that shield of protection. The Ark of Protection continues in all the righteous ones. And so far, in the last two parashats, we've gone through the history of mankind, and now we arrive in the 20th generation with the birth of our father, Abraham. And from now on, we're going to read portions with a little bit of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses. Now, the Bible, or the Torah, is like a history book. And like we said, 10 generations have gone by until we get to Lech Lecha. From Adam to Noah was 10 generations. From Noah to Abraham is another 10 generations. The story of Genesis is now going into a mode called show and tell. And show and tell begins with Abraham, the father of the nation of Israel, and God. And why God chose him to begin his work of salvation. So why Abraham? Why him? And the answer is written in this parasha, Lech Lecha. And the first clue is given to us in the name Lech Lecha. Let's define these two words to get their full meaning. The Hebrew word Lech means go. And Lecha means for yourself. But the concept is much more like get out, get out. God says to Abraham, get out. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 2, it says, and I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will aggrandize your name, and you shall be a blessing. The only way Abraham was going to become the father of many nations and receive all the promises of the blessings from God was by going out. And that requires obedience to his word. And for us, going out means we leave behind the ways of this world and we apply ourselves to the study of the weekly Torah portions. Therefore, growing in grace and knowledge requires we perform daily acts of loving kindness towards all mankind. That's exactly what Abraham and his wife Sarah were always doing. Together they were teaching the plan of God's salvation to those God would bring to their tent. Now, how do we know this? Because it says in Genesis 12, chapter 5, and Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. Now, these souls they're speaking about were converted souls. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. Now, the souls that they had gotten in Haran is referring to those who were converted and left their homes to follow Abraham's teaching, which leads to salvation. Therefore, Lech Lecha, or going out for us, is the call to salvation, which means we are to come out of this world. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17, it says, "Wherefore, come out from among them, and be you separated, says the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." Coming out of this world will not make you popular. In fact, it will make you a hated person because you're following the rules of the universe. Now listen to Yeshua's words found in the book of John chapter 15, verse 19. These are his words. He said, "If you were of the world, and the world then would love his own. And because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you." So when a follower of Yeshua's teaching is doing lech lecha, meaning go for yourself, year after year, they're moving forward steadily and progressing in the knowledge and the understanding of God's word and his plan of salvation. When you have that spark of God inside of you to go for yourself, you create a conviction within yourself to always press forward no matter what this world throws at you. And despite whatever comes along the way to get you to turn around or quit your forward momentum, you continue to maintain a steady, positive attitude. And our attitude is what's creating our family relationships, our business and working relationship, and yes, even your own health and welfare. But from time to time, we sometimes have to be inspired to have a good and positive attitude, and that requires the professional skills of a coach, a personal life coach. And you hear about many people that go to these seminars to listen to these life coaches, and they pay a lot of money to get in. And they sell all kinds of books and audio tapes telling you how to live with a good attitude and become successful in life. Did you ever realize the Torah, the Bible, is like a life coach? It's the best and most popular coaching book in the history of mankind. Why? Because the Torah has been doing this for 4,000 years. The Torah has a program for every week on how to become a better person, how to raise yourself up another notch above what you accomplished the week before. Because if you were involved in the study of the weekly Torah portions of last year and the previous year before that, every time you did that, you are becoming a better human being. And when somebody new starts the Torah reading portions for the first time, and their first challenge comes up, most of the time, they're going to get hit with a very sore trial. And it's probably happened to some of you right now. And what happens? They become disappointed because it was not as easy as they thought it would be. And then they go around looking sad and miserable, saying, "What can I do? I failed. But if a person who has dealt with many challenges of life over and over again, each year, year by year, now he sees his brother sad and suffering, he says to himself, "That's interesting. I'm going to take on this challenge and see if I can help my brother. Let's see how I can help and encourage him, because I am my brother's keeper. I have the ability to tackle that problem he's going through right now, and I have the experience because I have experienced with similar types of problems in the past, and with God's help, this one will be no different." And because this is the first test for this new person, they're going to come to you for help. And brethren, you can come to me or anyone in our work that has been here for a long time, and we are willing to help you. Now, although this test does not belong to us, you say to yourself, I can say to myself, I can still help this person because I've been there. I've walked in their shoes. Let's see how I can help this person. And you begin by comforting that person. And because you faced a similar challenge before, it becomes more exciting for you because the challenge is not as difficult for you because of your experiences. And when you see it for what it is, it's all about attitude. Even if you listen each week and you learn the lessons of that parsha, and you finish the yearly Torah cycle and then look back at yourself and perhaps feel you really did not learn anything, don't feel bad and beat yourself up, because we've got another round coming up next year. Another opportunity to grow. So every year is another opportunity which will reveal new discoveries using the old rules of the past. What do I mean by the old rules of the past? This is the covenant God gave to Abraham. These are the rules. And there are some that will say those rules are boring. They're always the same and they never change. Does anybody here play chess? And have you ever heard a chess player say, I'm so tired of the rules, let's change the rules. I can't play chess with the same old rules. No, you don't hear these. A professional chess player always plays by the rules. This is true for all games. The rules stay in place. They stay the same. Who are the ones that try to challenge the rules? They're the ones who do not have the commitment to master the rules, because the ones with the commitments to follow the rules get very excited because every game they play, they get better. And in the same way, mastering the rules of God's covenant, His laws and statutes, and committing to following our coach, the Torah, with excitement and unwavering commitment, this attitude will lead you to become a better person. A righteous person. And becoming a righteous person in God's eye is what every true Christian is striving to become. And that requires a lot of hard work. And last week we spoke about Noah, a righteous man. And as a righteous man, one has to commit to a way of life that leads to righteous character. And Noah understood those rules. Noah is a symbol of unwavering commitment. And keeping that commitment is keeping the covenant. What is the covenant? Those are the rules of the universe. Where are the rules of this covenant? The rules of the covenant is kept inside the ark. This covenant God makes with you is also granted to all the righteous who are totally committed to following all the rules given to us by our Creator. If you're committed to this and eventually master the rules the same way Abraham and Sarah did, that's when God will give you His gift, His light, His hidden light. It's the treasured light God hid for those that love and obey Him. This is the protective shield that we spoke about last week in Parasha Noah. And Noah never changed the rules of the covenant. And if you want to play the game of life that brings you into God's glorious kingdom, don't try to change the rules of God. Study and understand them. Study and understand the rules. Learn to commit, observe, and keep all the rules. That's when your journey really begins. That's what's called Lech Lecha. When you start Lech Lecha, you begin your journey. And only then will you begin to enjoy the game, the rules of the covenant, and eventually, as time moves forward, you will master it and darkness will submit to you, and you will no longer be its slave. Noah was always keeping the rule, the commitment, the covenant, which we know was kept hidden inside the ark. He and his family were hidden inside the ark, and it's the same thing as the Ark of the Covenant that accompanied the Israelites in the desert those 40 years. They both mean the same thing. So why was Noah allowed to go inside the ark? And it says in Genesis chapter 6, verse 9, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man and perfect in his generation. Noah walked with God. Noah was the only one in that generation with the commitment to obey all the rules of God. Noah was committed to the values of righteousness, which is a vital living force. And this force is waiting for you to take hold of. And guess what? It's not only an unseen force, it's also an unseen rule of the universe that is hidden only for the righteous to discover it. Would you like to discover this living force? Well, you can. And it's there, inside you, waiting for you to discover it and bring it alive into your heart. This unseen living force can only reside in the heart and mind of a righteous person. There is where this living unseen force resides. It resides in the ark of your heart. That's where it's hidden. And it's connected to the mind. And because you're constantly committed to the rules of love your neighbor as yourself, and you're committed to doing acts, physical acts of good works, that will give you the power to overcome your evil inclinations and desires. Because Noah committed to the rules of our Creator, he became stronger and more powerful than his evil inclination, than his fleshly desires and urges. Therefore, Noah and all his family survived the great flood that came upon the whole world while the others perished. And therefore, you too can survive the coming tribulation, the great time of testing that will come upon the whole world. In the book of Revelation, chapter 3, verse 10, it says, because thou hast kept the word of my patience. And here we're talking about the rules of the covenant, the rules of God. Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. If we accept and commit to obey all the rules of the kingdom of God, God says he will protect us from the great time of testing. If we accept all of those rules and we love his laws, now we become players in this game of life here on earth. We read in the Bible about many righteous men and women who were tested and went through a lot of suffering. So why do the righteous often suffer in this world? In the book of Psalms, chapter 11, verses 4 through 7, beginning to read in verse 4, says, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous and the wicked. And the one who loves violence, his soul hates. Upon the wicked, he will rain snares. Fire and brimstone and burning winds will be the portion of their cup. For the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. And the upright will behold his face. Now, there's a story about a Jewish scholar named Jose ben Hanina. He was a great Jewish scholar. He was a second generation Amorim. Amorim is a word, means those who speak over the people or a spokesman. That's who he was. And he lived, most scholars don't know when he lived or when he was born, but they have an idea that he lied some, or that he died sometime between 280 of the Common Era. So this man, Jose ben Hanina, he observed that the flax maker does not beat the flax too much when it hardens, lest it breaks. However, when the flax is of good quality, the more he beats it, the more it is improved. And similarly, God does not test the wicked, for they cannot bear it. However, he does test the righteous, and it is written, God tests the righteous man. You can find that in Psalms 11, verse 5. And those are the rules of the game. The rules of the covenant in the game of life that transforms you into a person of righteous character, of godly character. Now let's talk more about the rules and how they work. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you're going to play basketball and you tell everyone in your team, you know, I don't care about the rules anymore. I'm going to freelance. I'm going to do whatever I feel like doing. What's going to happen next? Now, if the coach doesn't hear that and doesn't do anything about it, then the team players will throw you out of the game. Why? Because you will mess everybody up. No one will enjoy playing the game if you don't play by the rules. Now, Noah was about recognizing and acknowledging the rules. And those rules are about how to win, how to overcome and create that shield of protection. But some will say, I can do the same thing without the rules and still win. Yeah, but that's going against the rules. Yes, but I can win without the rules, you say. Sorry, you cannot play this game because winning requires playing by the rules. Otherwise, it's not winning, it's cheating. And now comes Abraham, 10 generations after the flood, and the rules have not changed. And God is going to make him the father of this way of life. He will be the first person in the history of mankind to really teach these rules to his family and to all those who will listen. He will be the first one that will have the commitment to teach this way of life. Abraham and Sarah were the first ones who fully accepted these rules, and they were not going to play by the rules of their lawless society and its leaders. Now, with that said, I'm going to read a portion from the book of Jasher. A portion from the book of Jasher about the life of Abraham. But before I do that, let me give you a little background history about the book of Jasher. For those that don't know about this book, it is mentioned twice in the Old Testament. The first mention is in Joshua 10, verse 13. And then the second mention is referenced again in 2 Samuel, that's 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 18. Let's read these two scriptures. In Joshua chapter 10, verse 13, it says, and the sun stood still, and the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jasher? So there's the first mention. And in 2 Samuel, verse 1, chapter 18, it says, also he bade them teach the children of Judah to use the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. And serious students of the Bible know about this book. They know about it. They probably have it in their library. But what most of us probably don't know about the book of Jasher is this. There is a New Testament connection written by the Apostle Paul in his second letter to Timothy. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 8, Paul mentions two individuals from the book of Jasher. Let's read this. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 8, it says, "Now as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth, men of corrupt mind, probates concerning the faith." In this second letter to Timothy, Paul refers to two men who withstood Moses. He cites their names as Jannes and Jambres. Supposedly, these were the magicians referred to several times in the book of Exodus, chapter 7, verse 9, but with no names being mentioned. Nor are these names mentioned anywhere else in the Old Testament. Therefore, how could Paul possibly have had that information unless he read about them in the book of Jasher? Now, there are two names that are only mentioned by name. Now, I should say these two names are only mentioned by name once in Timothy and once in the book of Jasher. Now, here is a quote mentioning these two men in Jasher. In Jasher chapter 79, verse 27, it said, "And when they had gone, Pharaoh sent for Balaam the magician and to Jannes and Jambres his sons, and to all the magicians and conjurers and counselors which belonged to the king, and they all came and sat before the king." There is one further verse in the book of Jasher that relates to the quote from Timothy, and that's in Jasher chapter 73, verse 28. It says, "And Balaam the magician, when he saw that the city was taken, he opened the gates, and he and his two sons and eight brothers fell and returned to Egypt to Pharaoh, king of Egypt." Now let's get back to Abraham. In the book of Jasher, chapter 11, verse 13, it says, "Abraham was 50 years old when he was brought before Nimrod, the king of Babylon, who was also called Armaphel." Armaphel. It says here that King Nimrod and Armaphel are one and the same person, and the name Armaphel can be confirmed in Genesis chapter 14, verse 1. And if you go there, this is what it says. Genesis 14, 1, "And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar." So now we know that King Nimrod of the Old Testament and King Amraphel are the same person. Now I'm going to read about the story of Abraham that you're not going to find written in the Old Testament portions of our Bibles. In the book of Jasher, chapter 11, verse 5, it says, "And when Nimrod, that is Armaphel, had built these cities in the land of Shinar, he placed in them the remainder of his people, his princesses, and his mighty men that were in the kingdom. And Nimrod dwelt in Babel, and there he renewed his reign over the rest of his subjects, and he reigned securely, and the subjects and princes of Nimrod called his name Armaphel, saying that at the tower his princes and men fell through." This means he went to war and prevailed over people. Verse 13 says, "In the 50th year of the life of Abram, son of Terah," Abram, that was his name, God had not changed his name yet to Abraham, says, "Abram came forth from the house of Noah, and he went to his father's house, and Abram knew the Lord." Well, why would he know the Lord? Because he was playing by the rules, right? And it continues and says, "And he went in his ways and instructions, and the Lord his God was with him." How old was he? He was 50 years old. And Abram already understood the rules of the game. Verse 15, "And Terah His father was in those days still captain of the host of King Nimrod, and he still followed strange gods. And Abram came to his father's house and saw 12 gods standing there in their temple. And the anger of Abram was kindled when he saw these images in his father's house. And Abram said, "As the Lord liveth, these images shall not remain in my father's house. So shall the Lord who created me do unto me, if in 3 days' time I do not break them all." Now, this chapter has 61 verses explaining in detail Abraham's action when he destroyed these images. And I won't read all the verses, but suffice it to say, Abram destroyed all the idols, and he was brought before King Nimrod to give an account for his action. Now let's go to Jasher chapter 12. Jasher chapter 12, verse 1. It says, "And when the king," and this is Nimrod, "heard the words of Abram, he ordered him to be put into prison. And Abram was 10 days in prison." He was 10 days in prison being tested. And at the end of those 10 days, the king ordered that all the kings, princesses, and governors of different provinces and the sages should come before him. And they sat before him. And Abram was still in the house of confinement. And the king said to the princes and the sages, "Have you heard what Abram, the son of Terah, had done to his father? Thus has he done to him, and I ordered him to be brought before me, and thus has he spoken. His heart did not misgive him, neither did he stir in my presence. And behold, now he is confined in the prison. And therefore, decide what judgment is due to this man who reviled the king, who spoke and did all the things that you heard." And they all answered the king, saying, "The man who reviled the king should be hanged upon a tree. But having done all these things that he said, and having despised our God, he must therefore be burned to death. For this is the law in this matter. If it pleases the king to do this, let him order his servants to kindle a fire both night and day in thy thick furnace, and then we will cast this man into it." And the king did so, and he commanded his servant that they should prepare a fire for 3 days and three nights in the king's furnace, that is, in Kasadim. And the king ordered them to take Abram from prison and bring him out to be burned. Verse 7. And the king's servants, princesses, lords, governors and judges, and all the inhabitants of the land, about 900,000 men, stood opposite the furnace to see Abram. And all the women and little ones crowded upon the roofs and tower to see what was going to happen to Abram. And they all stood together at a distance, and there was not a man left that did not come on that day to behold the scene. And when Abram was come, the conjurers of the king and the sages saw Abram, and they cried out to the king, saying, "Our sovereign Lord, surely this is the man whom we know to have been the child at whose birth the great star swallowed the four stars, which we declared to the king now 50 years since. And behold, now his father has also transgressed thy command, and mocked thee by bringing thee another child, which thou didst not kill." And when the king heard their words, he was exceedingly wroth, and he ordered Terah, which is the father Abraham, to be brought before him. And the king said to him, "Hast thou heard what the conjurers have spoken? Now tell me truly, how did thou? And if thou hast spoken truth, thou shalt be acquitted." And seeing that the king's anger was so much kindled, Terah said to the king, "My lord and king, thou hast heard the truth, And what the sages have spoken is right. And the king said, how couldst thou do this thing, to transgress my orders, and to kill the child, and to give me a child that thou didst not beget, and to take value for it? And Tera answered the king, because my tender feelings were excited for my son at the time, and I took a son of my handmaid, and I brought him to the king, and the king said, who advised thee to do this? Tell me. Do not hide aught from me, and then thou shalt not die. And Tera was greatly terrified in the king's presence, and he said to the king, it was Haran, my elder son, who advised me to this. And Haran was in those days that Abraham was born, 32 years old. But Haran did not advise his father to anything, for Haran said this to the king in order to deliver his soul from the king, for he feared greatly. And the king said to Terah, Haran, thy son, who advised thee to do this, shall die through fire with Abram. For the sentence of death is upon him for having rebelled against the king's desire to do this thing. And Haran at the time felt inclined to follow the ways of Abram, but he kept it within himself. And Haran said in his heart, behold, now the king has seized Abram and on account of these things which Abraham did, and it shall come to pass that if Abram prevails over the king, I will follow him. But if the king prevail, I will go after the king. And then when Terah had spoken this to the king concerning Haran his son, the king ordered Haran to be seized with Abraham. And they brought them both, Abram and Haran his brother, to cast them into the fire. And all the inhabitants of the land and the king's servants and princes and all the women and little ones were there standing that day over them. And the king's servants took Abram and his brother, and they stripped them of all their clothes except their lower garments, which were upon them, and they bound their hands and feet with linen cords. And the servants of the king lifted them up and cast them both into the furnace. And the Lord loved Abram, and he had compassion over him, and the Lord came down and delivered Abram from the fire, and he was not burned. But all the cords which they were bound with were burned, while Abraham remained and walked about in the fire. And Haran died when they cast him into the fire, and he was burned to ashes, for his heart was not perfect with the Lord. And those men who cast him into the fire, the flame of fire spread over them, and they were burned, and 12 men, and 12 men of them died. And Abraham walked in the midst of the fire 3 days and 3 nights. And all the servants of the king saw him walking in the fire, and they came and told the king, saying, behold, we have seen Abram walking about in the midst of the fire. And even the lower garments which was upon him are not burned, but the cords with which he was bound is burned. And when the king heard their words, his heart fainted, and he would not believe them. So he sent other faithful princes to see this matter. And when they saw it and told it to the king, that the king rose to go and see, and he saw Abram walking to and fro in the midst of the fire. And he saw Haran's body burn, and the king wondered greatly. And the king ordered Abram to be taken out from the fire, and his servants approached to take him out. They could not, for the fire was around about, and the flames ascended toward them from the furnace. And the king's servants fled from it, and the king rebuked them, saying, make haste and bring Abraham out of the fire, that you shall not die. And the servants of the king again approached to bring Abraham out, and the flames came upon them and burned their faces, so that 8 of them died. And when the king saw that his servants could not approach the fire lest they should be burned, the king called out to Abraham, O servant of the God who is in heaven, go forth from amidst the fire and come hither before me. And Abram hearkened to the voice of the king, and he went forth from the fire and came and stood before the king. And when Abram came out, the king and all the servants saw Abram coming before the king and his lower garments upon him, for they were not burnt. But the cord which was he was bound was burnt. And the king said to Abram, "How is it that thou wast not burned in the fire?" And Abram said to the king, "The God of heaven and earth, in whom I trust, and who has all in his power, he delivered me from the fire into which thou didst cast me. And Haran, the brother of Abram, was burnt to ashes, and they sought for his body, and they found it consumed. And Haran was 82 years old when he died in the fire of Kasdim. And the king, princes, and inhabitants of the land, seeing that Abraham was delivered from the fire, they came and bowed down to Abram. And Abram said to them, 'Do not bow down to me, but bow down to the God of the world who made you, and serve him, and go in his way. For it is he who delivered me from out of the fire, and it is he who created the souls and spirits of all men, and formed man in his mother's womb, and brought him forth into the world. And it is he who will deliver those who trust in him from all pain.'" Abraham basically told the king, "I will not submit and play by your rules. I can only play by the rules of my God. Your rules are fake." And we know Abraham was thrown into the fire. What Abraham was basically telling the king was that life is not worth living without God's word. In other words, he said, "I'd rather be dead than play by your fake rules. And because it's all about your rules, I choose to reject them all, and I will only follow the rules of my God." And 4,000 years later, there are still leaders in countries that are playing by their own rules. And today we call them dictators. Abraham said, "If I cannot play by God's rule, this life is not worth it. Go ahead, throw me into the fire." And we read what happens next. And the king banishes Abraham from Babylon. So why did God not choose Noah 10 generations earlier to begin his plan of salvation? Although Noah was a righteous man, he did not fully understand all the rules in their entirety. And it was not the right time. And now along comes Abraham. And he gets it. He gets it. He understands it. Now here is the starting point of our family's history. This is the starting point of our family history. Here is where our family's history really begins. And here is where we begin our life journey. Why? Because when you get up in the morning and you're doing whatever you feel like, when you feel like it, you are not creating anything worthwhile to leave to your descendants. Your history has not started yet. You don't have a family story worth telling. Only until you can finally commit to the covenant, to the rules, those same rules Abraham was committed to, that's when your history really begins. And if you don't follow the rules and you commit to do whatever you think is right, the result will always be chaos, pain, and misery. In Proverbs chapter 14, Proverbs 14, verse 2, it said, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." The only way for anyone to raise themselves above their miseries and shortfalls, their discontentment and despair, their helplessness, and their feelings of what can I do because there's no justice and everybody is mean to me. When a person begins to think and believe that, then their negative human nature will take over their life. And you know what? They will believe what they are doing is right. And as we just read in Proverbs 14:2, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way to death, which means they're living a lie. They're living a lie because they're busy all day long blaming everybody else for their shortcomings except themselves. And the only way to come out of that way of thinking is for that person to take responsibility upon themselves and begin living by the rules of the heavenly kingdom of God. But how does this process work for a person who's afflicted? And they're bound up in their own chains of negativity. And they truly want to change their way of life to good. It says in the book of Job, chapter 36, beginning to read in verse 8 through 12. Now, the person speaking here is Elihu. Elihu is the youngest and wisest of Joseph's three friends. And he says in verse 8, listen what he says. He's a wise man. He said, if they be bound in fetters and beholden in cords of affliction, then he shows them their work and their transgressions that they have exceeded. He opens also the ears to discipline and commandeth that they return from iniquity. If they obey and serve him, they shall spend their days in prosperity and their years in pleasure. But if they do not obey, they shall perish by the sword and they shall die without knowledge. Now, who's this he? Who is this he Elihu is referring to that intervenes in the life of this person who's bound up in chains of their own doing, which comes about because they believe what they're doing is right? This he Elihu is referring to, it's God, our Creator. It says here that God, our Redeemer, who intervenes and awakens the evildoer to what they are doing is not right, even though they think they are doing right in their own minds. But this divine intervention requires the sinner or the evildoer to take positive steps to change for the better. And where does the sinner begin? He begins by doing lech lecha, which means get yourself out of the mess you made. And how does Lech Lecha begin? It begins by, and never forget this, brother. Never forget this. It is a mandate. It begins by loving your neighbor as yourself. That's the only choice a person has in this life to raise themselves about their own self-created reality of misery. And didn't our Master, Jesus the Christ, tell us this was the most important and greatest commandment? In the book of Mark, chapter 12, verse 29 through 31, beginning to read in verse 29, it said, Jesus replied, this is the most important. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. And he continues and said, the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. No other commandment is greater than these. Now there's an old Jewish story about the Ark of Noah that said, when lie, and I spell it L-I-E, or falsehood, wanted to enter inside the Ark of Noah, Noah said to that entity, "You have to bring somebody with you. Where is your mate?" And nobody wanted to be a mate for lie. Only Law, L-A-W, accepted. So they did a hoopah. Lie and Law got married. And they both came inside the ark together. Now this is just a legend, just a story. Therefore, every time you do something and it involves a lie, even if you're living a lie and don't know it, you have to wake yourself up and become aware of the unseen laws of God and remember that Law is lie's mate. Lie comes with Law. Law will make you pay the price for lying. One way or another, the law will require you to pay the price in one form or another. And that's the concept called measure for measure. And what happens when you lie? Very easy. You lose friends. You lose credibility. And when you do it often enough, one day you will look yourself in the mirror and say, "That guy I'm staring at the mirror is a liar." Have you ever met these kinds of people? It's not worth it to lie, because truth is the way to true happiness. Now, what if telling a lie is the only way that will save your life and the lives of others? What do you do? Well, we have an example of that in Genesis chapter 12, 13. We have an example of that. It says in Genesis 12, 18, "And Pharaoh called Abram and said, 'What is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst not thou tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so that I took her to be my wife? And now, therefore, behold thy wife. Take her and go thy way.'" So what is the moral behind this? The moral is one does not always have to say the whole truth, because I said the truth and look what came out of it. You have to be wise when telling the truth. But saying all the truth is not just saying what you feel like. "Oh, but I said the truth and look what came out of it. I got in trouble." Right? So you don't always have to tell the complete truth. Here we're given an example. You can tell the truth, but not all the truth. Now back to Parasha. Back to the Parasha. Genesis 12, verse 1. It says, "Now the Lord Jehovah said unto Abram, 'Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into the land that I will show thee.'" So when it says in the beginning of this parasha, "Get thee out of thy country," we have a little problem here. What is the problem? Abraham had already left before he got this message when he was in the land of Haran. His home is in Ur, which is hundreds of miles away from Haran. Where is Ur? Today, the city of Ur is south of Iraq. And today, Haran is the Turkish Kurdistan area north of Syria. So Abraham traveled a long way up the rivers of Mesopotamia all the way up to Haran, and now God is telling him, "Leave your home, your country." Wait a minute. That's not his home when God spoke these words. Abraham had already left his home. And by the way, why did he leave his home? Because he faced the possibility of being killed after being placed in the fiery furnace and survive, as we read in the book of Jasher chapter 12. Remember, Abraham was saved one time by a mighty miracle in the furnace for 3 days. And when you go through a miracle like that, which involves life or death, do you want to repeat that all over again? Of course not. Why? Let's say you ate something that was life-threatening and you have some kind of food allergy that can kill you. And you go to the hospital and only by some miracle the doctor saves you. Would you eat that same food all over again? No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't try it again. You don't waste a miracle on the same miracle again. Abraham is running away. That's one reason why he left his home. As strange as it seemed, this method of Lech Lecha does not seem to be worthwhile. But this method is correct, because when we read the Torah, the message is for us. It's for ourselves. And the message Lech Lecha is saying to all those that want to comply with all the rules of the universe, the laws God created, is this. Welcome to the spot where life is worth living. Welcome to the family of the children of light. And now that the holy days are over and we're in the eighth month, the stress test month, now you understand from the previous parsha called Noah, these are the rules, and the rules are never going to be changed. Now today, in this Sabbath day, is when we are all called to start and make our first move. Lech Lecha. Make your move. Don't put off for tomorrow what you can decide to do today. In other words, when you're playing a game and your turn has come, there is a limit on how much time you have to make your move. For instance, in basketball, when your team gets the ball, you have so many seconds to inbound it. You just can't stand there holding the ball as much as you want, or stay in one zone as long as you want, because you will get a penalty. You have to move the ball up the court. In life, that means it's your turn. You have to take the next step. You have to make the next move. And there's not that much time, so don't spend it standing there doing nothing. Because if you don't move at a certain time, you're not playing by the rules of the game. And in regards to when you're being tested by God, that brings us to another type of game where you are allowed to hold the ball and the other team cannot move unless you move. And when you move toward the goal line, the other team is allowed to beat you up. And that's called American football. How crazy is that? Because when everyone wants to beat you up, doesn't logic tell us to run for your life, turn around, and go back? Metaphorically speaking, Abraham was tested in this way 10 times. And they were all very grievous tests. And he always ran forward toward the goal. So no matter what kind of game you play or what life throws at you, we were made to always move forward. And Abraham proved to all mankind that it could be done. And when a test comes your way, you have two choices. Number one, you can move forward, or number two, you can move backward or retreat. So if I agree to play by the rules of God's heavenly kingdom, what's next? When you commit to play by the rules of the covenant, you will begin to grow in righteous character. But know for sure, you will be tested along the way. And these tests are coming from God, our Creator, who is spirit and who tests the righteous. In the book of Psalm chapter 11 verse 5 says, Jehovah trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence his soul hateth. And when you're tested, remember, you have to follow the rules and move forward, not backwards. Always move forward doing righteous deeds. Nothing should be preventing you from continuing forward. and doing works of giving and sharing. When a person who's being tested or he's being tested continues to move forward in this matter, that's when they will experience answered prayer along with miracles that are seen and maybe unseen for some. But the moment you stop playing by the rule, the moment you stop going forward, the moment you stop doing acts of kindness, you stop taking responsibility and not help those in need, the moment you think, I've done enough, I need to rest, I'm tired, and I don't want to do anything anymore, guess what's going to happen? Bam! Bam! Life will hit you. You're going to get hit with a stress test, another challenge, and you won't know what hit you. Even if you let your guard down for a moment, you lowered your shield, you will be attacked. So learn this lesson now. Keep moving forward and don't stop. Commit to this way of life of playing by the rules of the covenant. Commit to loving others as yourself, and your shield, your protective shield, will always be raised to protect you. What usually happens when a person truly desires to change their life for the good? Well, things begin to get worse, don't they? When things are going terrible for them, when things around them are falling apart and going bad and life becomes increasingly painful each day, this person must stay focused on the game of life and continue going forward by playing by all the rules of the heavenly kingdom of God, never deviating. And this process of change is called coming out of the world. That's what this process is called, coming out of the world. But for those of us who are no longer of this world, who have been called to come out of this world, who are being led and tested by God, we must not despair. We must have that earnest desire to always move forward and be willing to go above and beyond the call of duty, because that's what makes us different than any other people in the face of the earth. We have to develop an earnest desire to always follow all the rules of our Creator and to go above and beyond the call of duty, just like Abraham was doing, because in this parasha, we are being called to follow in the footsteps of our father Abraham, which is what Yeshua told the Pharisees who challenged him. Yeshua said words to the effect in the book of John, chapter 8, I believe is verse 39. I have a reference here to chapter 13, so you may want to check this verse. John chapter 8, 39, it says, they, referring to the Pharisees, answered him, said, Abraham is our father. Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. So why is that? Because Abraham was always willing to follow the rules of the kingdom, no matter what challenges he had to face. God said to Abraham, if you continue in this way of life, and I'm reading from Genesis chapter 12, verse 2, God said, if you continue in this way of life, basically this is what he said, I'm quoting, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and be thou a blessing, and I will bless them that bless thee, and him that curseth thee will I curse, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed, and be thou a blessing. So Abraham went as the Lord has spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So what is it about our patriarch Abraham that he was always willing to follow all the rules of the heavenly kingdom? It's the simple truth that Abraham not only had control of his human nature, but that he knew the only living force in him that was capable of connecting to his Father in heaven was the soul inside his body. Abraham already knew the truth about his soul when he was thrown into the fiery furnace. But how did Abraham get to the point when his soul awakened inside him so that he knew the soul inside him was his true self? It was when he learned to subdue his inner ego, And that's what this parasha wants us to know. This parasha is using Abraham's life victories as a means to show us that one can subdue the body's ego to the point where our inner soul is awakened. So what is this ego all about? Ego is something that's present in every human being, and it's a very powerful destructive force. But most people are unaware there's such a thing as an ego. They'll never know about this destructive force that binds up their soul, their true self. And therefore, when we do not realize we have an ego, that's when it becomes a force of destruction. However, there is a tool anyone can use that will get rid of that destructive force, and it's called consciousness. When you train your consciousness to become aware that this negative, evil, destructive force lives inside you, and if you're persistent in your awareness to recognize that through your consciousness, then there will come a time that your soul will awaken inside of you. And that's when you will understand what freedom is all about. What are you doing when you train your consciousness to wake up and become aware you have a negative destructive force called ego? Your consciousness is taking that destructive force of evil, and because your desire to follow the rules of the heavenly kingdom, the soul's consciousness then transforms that negative force into a powerful positive force that will resist the urge to self-destruct. In other words, your true self is transferring that destructive force into a powerful positive tool to strengthen your soul to awaken itself. And how do you make that transfer of a negative force into a positive force? The same way Abraham did it. And again, how did he do it? He played by all the rules of the heavenly kingdom. And through many tests and trials, Abraham's soul was strengthened and it awoke to its true identity. How do we strengthen our soul? How do we do that? By challenging it. We challenge the soul by not giving in or not giving in to the bodily urges of the ego and its destructiveness. When you can do that, you create a powerful, powerful, positive force that cannot be destroyed. Isn't that what we all truly desire to do, to create a positive, powerful force inside of us? And I'm talking about the soul God gave us that is good and seeks only to do good. So what's the secret of overcoming the ego? The secret of overcoming the ego is having the clarity of the conscious mind that all those negative things that happen to you that you think are bad, it's actually only an illusion. Or should I say, it's an illusion your ego created. because our ego is like a giant man holding a battle axe who is standing in front of you in a crossroad. When an untrained or undisciplined disciple sees this giant, they become frightened. They turn around and run for their life. They turn around and go backward. However, the wise person who is trained and disciplined looks closely and sees that the giant has no feet and simply walks right past him. That's the ego, all bark and no bite. When you can see this to the degree that you can recognize the ego as a virtual giant mirage, then after much trial and error, you will begin to see through the mirage, therefore transferring that negative force into an experience of seeing your life through the awakened soul. The key to overcoming your giants is to recognize the ego within us as a virtual giant mirage, to see it as a virtual mirage, and at the same time, you need to view the whole experience through the eyes of your soul and not your bodily urges. In other words, the ego is the mud on the lenses of the soul. And to view the whole experience through the eyes of your soul is the clarity or the water that washes it away. The true nature of our physical human experience here on earth begins with the awareness of you, brethren, are a soul. A soul that experiencing or that is experiencing physical life through the senses of the body. Therefore, when a negative thought enters your mind, the next reaction should be a corresponding positive feeling expressed through action in the form of love thy neighbor as thyself. That's called training the consciousness. Every moment our consciousness is being bombarded by thoughts. We're always being bombarded by thoughts. How does that work? Metaphorically speaking, our consciousness activates something like a movie projector inside our mind that runs the film into the experience of the big screen. And all our human senses will faithfully give you the corresponding feeling of whatever image is in your mind. However, we have the ability to choose whether what you are experiencing is just your ego doing a thing or a true depiction of real life challenges, which are opportunities for us to change for the good. You are a soul, brethren. And once you realize the powerful positive force that is in you to do good, then you become the chooser. You decide what experience you want to create. Is it going to be a negative feeling of perhaps vicious dogs biting at your flesh and bones? Or an experience of a bunch of dogs licking you and just wanting to play with you? You're the chooser. Pick what reality you want to experience. So what's it going to be? A reality of good or bad? Do you want to know what the trick is to living a happy, well-adjusted life filled with happiness and joys is? The trick is to have the ability to recognize and choose to see what is good in everything and everyone. Just because a test or trial overtakes your thought and your feelings of fear appear to be very real to you, or you perceive them to be real, that doesn't mean they need to have any greater impact than a bad horror movie playing out inside your head. So why not recognize your sensory feelings of an abject fear and choose to see what is good? Because you do have the ability to choose what you are experiencing. You have that ability to choose what you want to experience. Is it just your ego doing a thing or a true depiction of real life? So what about the soul? What is it? What is our soul? Now there's a Jewish sage that lived in the 16th century. His name was Rabbi Chaim Vital. And he spoke about our soul in this manner. He writes, "It is understood by discerning people that a person's body is not the actual person. The body is simply the flesh of the person, as it is written, 'You have clothed me with skin and flesh and covered me with bones and tendons.'" And you can find that in Job chapter 10:11. The actual person is the soul. The body is merely a garment the soul wears. The same way that a tailor will make physical garments in the shape of the body. God similarly made the body, which is the garment of the soul, in the shape of a soul. That's why Yeshua said in the book of John, chapter 6, 63, chapter 6, verse 63, Yeshua said, "It is the spirit who gives life, but the flesh profits nothing. The words that I have spoken to you are spirit and are life." Now, let's say you're going through a huge test right now. All kinds of negative thoughts are flooding your consciousness. Ask yourself, where are all these negative thoughts coming from? My ego or my soul? If it's from your ego, you can see that it is distorting reality. Why is it distorting reality? Because the ego's job is to blind you from the truth, because it doesn't want you to know the truth. So the simple truth of the matter is this: the test you're going through will have a good outcome only if you stay faithful to God's word. And you need to play by the rules of the heavenly kingdom of God, just like Abraham played by the rules and escaped the fiery furnace, because he was playing by the rules. When tests and trials come your way and you begin to experience all kinds of fears and negative thoughts, the key to overcoming is to become aware that it's your ego putting you through this misery. And if you're aware of your ego, that's when you have total clarity what is happening. That's when you choose to doubt ego's validity. So what happens when you choose to side with your ego? And this is what the Jewish sages tell us. When you choose to listen to your ego and it comes out, all the light of wisdom gets blocked up. It's blocked up above you like a tide that does not want to touch you. And you become empty. And that's what it's meant by the Jewish saying that said proud people are empty people, because the light of wisdom leaves that person. Now, let's say you want to teach a biblical principle to one of your family members or friends. What's the guarantee wisdom will grow and prosper in the person you are teaching? The key is never let ego get in the way of sharing knowledge with others that have less than you. Don't get proud that you know and they don't know, because then you will lose everything. And if you made that mistake in the past, don't worry about it. Learn from your mistake, get rid of the ego or the pride, and you move forward. If you choose to listen to your ego or pride, listen to what's going to happen to you. It says in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 14, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Here it's saying, you're going to fall and go into destruction mode. So exactly what is this thing called pride? Pride is another word for ego. It's the same as ego. They go hand in hand. Their mission is to keep the soul away from knowing the truth that will set you free. Pride and ego's MO, or method of operation, is to attack you spiritually from two sides. The side, which is the inside, and the other side, which is the outside. And if you're not aware that's what is going on, your body will become to weaken as you become more arrogant and filled with pride and ego. These two negative forces will leave a trail of death and destruction behind them. And what happens when something dies inside you? You get sick. And if not treated, your immune system will weaken. You will get sick, and eventually you can die. Now, God gives us a key to good health, but this key will only work when you have clarity of mind and are aware of the negative, destructive forces of pride and ego, and begin to take measures to overcome them. What is the key to good health? In the book of Proverbs, chapter 3, verse 5, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and lead not unto thy own understanding." Verse 6. "In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. But be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil." Now this phrase, "be not wise in your own eyes," is referring to a person who's aware of their ego. They're aware of their false pride, and they're taking measures not to reawaken the ego inside them. What happens to this person once they're on the true path of conquering their ego? Well, God rewards them. How? In the next verse, in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 8, it said, "It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones." The phrase "shall be health to thy navel" means the body will begin a healing process, beginning from the center of the body, which is our navel, and it will radiate throughout the entire body. And what about the phrase "and marrow to thy bones"? This is speaking about cleansing. The marrow is where new blood is manufactured. And where does the soul reside? Our soul resides in the blood. And if you want to be truly healed of all your sicknesses and diseases, it begins by getting rid of the old self, the ego, and pride. And you begin to love your neighbor as yourself. That's our mandate. Once you're in line with this mandate, the body or the vessel which contains our soul will no longer profit you. That vessel will no longer profit you. It's just like Yeshua said. In John chapter 6, verse 63, it says, "It is the spirit that quickens the flesh." I should say, "It is the spirit that quickens." Now the flesh profits nothing. "The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are truth." When you can understand what the ego is all about and you have conquered it, our soul is set free. And your joy will know no bounds. And you will seek ways to honor your Creator for opening your eyes to His wonderful truth. In Proverbs chapter 3, 7, where it says, "Be not wise in your own eyes." And we understood this to mean ego and pride. When that is no longer part of who we are, then what's going to fill this void? It's going to be wisdom, true wisdom. Again, in Proverbs 3, verse 13, It says, happy is the man that finds wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold of her, and happy is everyone that retaineth her. The Lord by wisdom hath formed the earth, by understanding hath he established the heaven. By this knowledge the depths are broken up, and the clouds drop down the dew. My son, let not them depart from thy eyes. Keep sound wisdom and destruction. So shall they be life unto thy soul, and grace to thy neck. Then shalt thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. When thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Yea, thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh. For the Lord shall be thy confidence, and shall keep thy foot from being taken. It says in Proverbs 3:22, we just read that. It says, so shall they be life unto thy soul and grace unto thy neck. Which means godly wisdom has to come with grace. If wisdom is not grace, it's not really wisdom. That's why you always want to have a mind of sharing. Because when you truly want what is best for your neighbor, your good intentions will create that godly wisdom. But what about our fears and doubts? When you are given that godly wisdom from above through grace, that's when you become a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a righteous man or a woman. But does that mean you will no longer have to struggle with fear and doubts? Now you would think that a righteous man of God, such as Abraham, would not have to struggle with fears or doubts. Let's look at Abraham more closely. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 1 through 6, I'm going to read that. Beginning in verse 1, it says, after these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abraham in a vision, saying, fear not, Abram. Fear not, I am thy shield, and thy exceeding great reward. And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, This shall not be thy heir, but he that shall come forth out from thy own bowels shall be thy heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven, and tell the stars if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. God knew Abraham was afraid he would not have a direct heir born to him from Sarah, his wife. Why would Abraham suspect he would not have a son born to him from Sarah, his wife? Because Abraham was an astrologer. That's right, brethren. He was a very successful astrologer before he came out of Ur. And when he read the stars, Abraham did not see a son that would be born to him. And he continued to depend on the stars. Perhaps there was something he had overlooked. And he continued but never found in the star where they foretold that he would have offspring from his wife Sarah. And God knew his fixation with the star, and that he feared he would not have a son born to him from Sarah, his wife, until one night God took him outside and said, beginning to read in Genesis chapter 15, verse 5, he said, and he took him outside and said, "Now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." What God told Abraham was basically, you can read all the star charts you want, and you will never come to see an offspring coming forth from Sarah, your wife. But if you want to find something in the stars, I can change the star to fit your astrology chart so that you can see a son will be born to you. I'm capable of changing the star to fit and fulfill your desire. However, wouldn't it be better if you did not see a child born to you based on your astrology charts? Wouldn't it be better if you put your trust in me without looking toward the stars? I'm greater than the stars. I created the stars. And in your case, I did not foretell the birth of your son in the stars. I hid that within myself so that you would know I am God Almighty. And when we read the narrative in Genesis 15, verses 1 through 6, there were three things that Abraham was afraid of. Number one, on the simplest level, he feared that the kings he defeated would regain military power and come after him and attack him. On the spiritual side, number two, he feared that all the merits he had earned through his righteous deeds and acts of kindness had now been used up by the miracles of his victories over the kings. If so, he could not expect divine assistance in the future. And number three, he was afraid that he would die without children. And God responded by reassuring Abraham of all these three. In other words, God was basically saying, if these kings attack you, fear not, Abraham. I am a shield for you. And if you think some of your merits have been consumed, fear not, Abraham, your reward is great. And as far as having children, fear not, Abraham. Go and count the stars, so shall your offsprings be. This is the message of Parasha Lech Lecha. There are many more lessons in this parasha. Abraham feared God. Abraham was in awe of God. Although his human fears caused him to doubt, even though Abraham was a righteous man, nonetheless, God did not leave or forsake him because of those reasons. But he strengthened and reassured Abraham. God said, "Fear not, Abraham, I am your shield." Now place your name here instead of Abraham. Place your name here in these verses. And God is talking to us, and he says, "Fear not, I am your shield. Fear not, I am your reward." And in regards to his soon coming glorious kingdom, God is revealing to us that when he said regarding having children, this is a code word for family. In other words, God is also telling us, "Fear not, brethren, and count the stars. So shall your families be." Thank you for listening. And remember, hear and do God's words with happiness and joy. Love your neighbor. Speak good to all people. Spread the message. Continue your studies. Let your light shine. Become like a servant to others. And may God continue to bless you all. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.